Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Ayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the top line of Daf Ayin. We continue with the topic we were discussing in our previous shiur. The Mishnah had mentioned that there were 10 different categories of pedigree that ascended to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Ezra, the leader of the Jewish people at the time of the building of the second temple, the second Beis HaMikdash. The double underline highlights the different categories that were mentioned. The diamonds highlight the expression Menolon, from where do we know that they came? Geri v'Haruri, Gerim, converts, and Harurim, freed slaves. They too came along with Ezra, Menolon, from where do we know that? Omar of Chizto, the Omar Kro. The Pasuk in Sefer, in the book of Ezra, says, V'chol hanivdal mitumas goye ha'oretz alehem. All those who separated themselves from Tumas Oretz is a reference to idolatry, and hence the converts and the slaves. A slave, once he converts to Judaism, or once he is freed from his slavery, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. Mamzeri. Later, the Gemara will discuss the other categories of Shtuki and Asufi. You can see there's a double underline that appears about 10 lines later from here, highlighting the terms Mishasko and Asufi, additional categories. In the meantime, Mamzeri. Where do we know that Mamzerim came, the illegitimate type Jews? Minolon Dichtiv. Now, we have a new marking, the crown shape, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, the structural note, these are Psukim Shemelamdim Sh'olu Mamzerim, Psukim that teach us that Mamzerim came with Ezra. Bahem Shech, in the continuation of the Gemara, where we've noted a base, because we're starting off with Psukim focusing on Mamzerus, but later we will deal with the Gam al Shtuki v'Asufi. The Gemara. So the Pasuk says in Nehemiah, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud, Vayishma Sanbalat Hachoroni, V'tuvya ho'eved ho'amoni uksiv, another pasuk, and we have to put the psukim together. There's a pasuk now cited from Sefer Nehemiah, Perek Vav, Pasuk Yudches. Before we read Pasuk Yudches, we have on the side Pasuk Yudzayin there, and it's on the side of the Gemara. We've written Gam Bayomim Ohem Marbim Chayre Yehuda Igrosehem Hochos Al Tuvia V'Asher L'Tovia Ba'ol Salehem. The posting indicates there was an exchange of letters concerning the gentleman Tuvia that was mentioned, who was a slave. The Pasuk, the Gemara continues, Uksiv ki rabim b'Yehuda ba'alei shvua lo. He had many that were sworn allies of his. Ki chosenhu l'shechanya. And this is an important point. This Tuvia, a slave, was a son-in-law, l'shechanya ben Orach, who was a Jew. Shechanya ben Orach, we say, was a Jew, and Tuvia, the slave, was his son-in-law. V'yehoichonon beno, lokach esbas mishulom ben Berechia. So we have here Tuvia had married the daughter of Shechanya. I should say that's one point. And Yehochanan, his son, married the daughter of Meshulam ben Berechia. And Kosovar, we are working with the assumption, Oivet Kichovim ve'Evet Habo Abbas Yisrael Havlad Mamzer. So Tuvia being the example of the Evet, Bas Yisrael was the daughter of Shechanya. The Vlad, the resultant child, would be a Mamzer. Honicha, this will work out well, that we have a source that Mamzerim came up with Ezra, and Nehemiah, the posik from which we're citing, is a contemporary of Ezra. So, Honicha lemandomar Havlad Mamzer. This proof works out according to that opinion that says that a Jewish woman who's impregnated by a slave, the child is a mamzer. However, there's an opinion that says that a Gentile or a slave that impregnates a Jewish woman, the child is associated with the mother alone, and hence the child is a vlad kosher, is a totally kosher Jew. So we don't have any evidence of mamzerim if you take that approach. Vesumi mai dahavu leboni, and even if you say that that Tuvia married the daughter of Shechanya, who says that he had children, Dilmalo havu leboni, maybe he had no children, so there were no mamzerim. Vesu mimai dahocha havu lehu usliku, who says that the children were born in Bavel and came up with Ezra, which is the topic we are focusing on. Dilma Hosam Havu, maybe they had already been in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi points out from the time of Gedalia ben Achikam, who was at the end of the after the destruction of the first temple, there were Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So maybe the mamzer that was born from this union was from that time period and not those that came with Ezra. So we don't have, from the psukim cited till now, we don't have a source, a concrete source that mamzerim came up along with Ezra. Elo mehocha. So we try the following. Second pasuk. V'ele, and we noted in our introduction that there was the base is a reference to this pasuk. This pasuk eventually is going to serve as a source for Shtuki and Asufi as well. So the pasuk says, V'ele ha'olim mitel melach tel charsha, Chruv Adon v'imer, v'lo yochlu lahagid beis avoysam, v'zaram im Misrael heim. We just read a pasuk without explaining it. The underlining that you see in the next few lines highlights different phrases from this pasuk, which will address our topic. Tel Melach. The pasuk from Perek Zayin, pasuk Samach Aleph that we read, mention Tel Melach. Elu b'nei Adam shedoymen ma'aseim l'maisis stoim shenebcha l'tel Melach. The Tel Melach literally is a mound of salt. Sodom, the city of evil, that was at the time of Avram Avinu and Lot. Eventually the Almighty punished them and made the city into a mound of salt. What characterized the behavior of Sodom? Amongst other things, there was immorality, including people, men, impregnating other men's wives. That creates mamzerus. So Maisis Sodom, in this posuk, in this comment or commentary on the posuk of Tel Melach, is a reference to mamzerus. Tel Harsha ze shekore abo v'imoy mashaskoi. That's a reference to those that would refer to some gentleman as dad, and the mother of the child knows who his mother is. Mother says, be quiet. indicating that's not your father. In other words, the child doesn't know who his father is. That's a shtuki. That's why you see a double underline, mishasko. The root of the word is shosak, keep quiet or silence, and hence the term shtuki, one of the additional categories mentioned in our Mishnah. So we see that shtuki came up with Ezra as well. The pasuk that we had read, pasuk Samach Aleph, began with the words v'elu v'elah ha'olim, those that arose, that came, that ascended Teretz Yisrael from their from Tel Melach and Tel Chasha. The simple meaning of the pasuk would be names of places, but you can see that they are really descriptions of the people that came with Ezra. The pasuk goes on to say v'lo yochlu lahagid beis avoysam v'zarom im Yisrael heim. They were unable to identify Beis Avosa, meaning their fathers, Vizarom, their mothers, whether or not they were Jewish. Zehu Asufi, Shenesaf min Ashuv. This is a reference to that other category, the Asufi. In our previous year, we characterized them as the classic case of baby found in basket, where he's gathered in from the street, and you don't know anything about his background. Kruv Adon V'Imer. These words are also quotes from the pasuk Samach Aleph that we had a few lines ago. What we do now with these words is we darshan them, but out of order. Amar Rabbi Avo. That's the term we mentioned, out of order. Rashi calls it Misaris HaMikra V'Dorish. It's to darshan, to explain the words, but not in the order they appear in the verse. So, Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Adon. Adon is the Almighty, the Master. Ani Omar to you, Yisrael, lefanai chashuvim kikruv. I intended the Jewish people to be important and significant in front of me, like kruv. Kruv is a reference to that which is holy. In the Beis Hamikdash, you had images that were on the Oron in the first Beis Hamikdash, and Shlomo Melech also made images, statue-like entities that were called Kruvim. The Almighty, those Kruvim were Kruvei HaKodesh. They were holy, as the Pasuk in Yechezkel, who had visions of a lofty heavenly nature, also noted Kruvim, which is a symbolizes that which is holy. So the Almighty said, I intended for you, the Jewish people, to be in front of me as holy, v'heim somu atzmon kenomer, and they made themselves immoral. Now the word nomer is a reference to a type of creature, probably from the feline family. Some translate it as a leopard, some as a tiger, but it's a type of animal. The translation is not important, but it's an animal that doesn't necessarily procreate with its own mate, but seeks the mates of others, so that it's a symbol of immorality. And when you have a society that's immoral, so it's the antithesis of a society of holiness. Iko Diamri, Omar Rebbe Avo, Omar Adon. This is a totally different approach to what we just darshan, but also in the name of, some say in the name of Rabbi Avo, Omar Adon, the Almighty said, Afa pisha somu atzmam kinomer, hein chashuvin lefonai kikruv. Even though they behave so immorally, they remain nevertheless important to me, like the kruv, like that which is holy. A very, very positive drosha. Omar Rabba Babrachana. And here we have a new series marking. And in our under our Mivneh heading above, we noted that this marking continues till Amud Beis. And it's Kol HaNosei Isha, etc. People who marry women for certain purposes. You can see just by scanning ahead, we also used a dot underline. So the first is Kol HaNosei Isha Sheina HaGeneslo, a woman who is not fit for him, who's puzzle. Next one, you see a man who marries a woman for her money. And then again, you see a marriage with a woman that's not fit, that's Eino HaGenes. And we indicated that this Kol HaNosei Isha scheme will continue to Amud Beis, where the bottom part, lower part of Amud Beis, you see again, Kol HaNosei Isha Sheina HaGenes Lo. the Gemara. So Rabbi Bar Chana tells us, "Kol Anoisi Isha Sheina Hagenes Loi Malel of Hakosuf." The Torah compares this to Kiilu Choshoy L'Chol Olam Kulo V'Zoroi Melach, as if he plowed up the whole world, and instead of planting seeds, he planted melach, salt. Eino Hagenes Lo is once again a woman who's posel for him. We've been discussing quite a bit in the last number of Dapim the issue of pedigree and the insistence upon marrying a woman that's fit for you in the pedigree sense. So anyone who marries a woman that's not fit for him, it's considered as if he plowed up the world and planted it with salt, shenemar. And here we quote the pasuk we saw before, V'eile ha'olim mitel melach tel harsha. Harsha, before we darshaned it, one way from the word chiresh, silence. Here we're darshaning it from the lashon of plowing up, like lachrosh or machresha, it's to plow. Omar Rava Bar Rav Ada. You have a new marking, this a triangle. These are statements of Rava Bar Rav Ada. And he says, Omar Rava Bar Rav Ada, Omar Rav, Kol Anoisi Isha L'Shum Mamon. One who marries a woman for money. Havin lo bonim she'enon mehuganim. The result will be children. They will have children that are not refined. They're not proper. The word hogen means good. She'enon mehuganim, like we had the word before, she'ena hogenes lo. Children that are not fit. Shenemar Bashem Bogodu Kibonim Zorim Yolodu. The Pasuk, Rashi across from here says, Bonim Zorim Meisha Psulalo Ulashem Momo Nosva. Rashi adds that which we didn't explain, but he says that he married a woman that's not fit for him. So why did he marry her? Because he wanted her money. Kidimisaim Krov, the Pasuk goes on to say, Yochlem Chodesh Eschelkehem. Mamon shenasa lishmo. Chalkeim is their portion, which is a reference to the money that the woman brought in for which he married her. Yoichlim b'chodesh echad. This you'll see later in the Gemara that the money will be consumed rapidly. So we recognize that this pasuk that the Gemara started quoting from Hosea Perek Hey pasuk Zion is dealing with a person that married a woman that was not fit. And he married her for her money. The term bonim zorim literally is strange sons, but that's the reference to children that are not fit. The new marking, the trapezoid shape that you see, highlights the expression v'shema tomar. These are all attempts to to reduce the severity of what Rabbo Baravano Ado referred to. And you'll see each time how the Pasuk is a response to this suggestion. V'shemo Tomar, we continue in the Gemara. You might say, okay, man married unfit woman, but for her money. Children will come out no good. However, you might say Momon Polat, that at least the money will be saved, that he'll benefit from the money. The money will not dissipate. Talmud Lomar, the continuation of the Pasuk is Ato Yoichlem Chodesh Eschelkehem. Their portion will be consumed in a month. V'shemo Toimar Chelkoi V'lo Chelka. You might say that what's consumed is the portion that's ascribed to the husband. That's called nichsei tzon barzel. That's money a woman brings into the marriage that the husband has full control over. He guarantees the woman their value in the event that they get divorced. So since he offers that guarantee to her, those properties are considered his. So maybe that's what will not be spared, Avol, but not her portion. Her portion is called Nichsei Muluv. Those are properties, likewise, that she brings into the marriage that the husband does not take responsibility for, and hence he cannot sell them or transfer ownership of those properties. All he can do is benefit from their fruits. So maybe that aspect of the properties she brings into the marriage, we call the Nirsei Mulug, will be spared. Talmud Lomar Chelkehem. From that word, we see not only his properties, won't the portion that he receives in the properties that she brings in will not be spared, but likewise that which she brought, that which that is ascribed to her as well, will not be saved. The Shema Toimer Lizman Merubo, you might say, okay, the properties will dissipate, but after a long time, so he will benefit from the properties over a long span of time. Not so. Talmud Lomar Chodesh. The Pasuk said, only all within a month it will dissipate. My Mashma. From what do you see, or from how do you see this in the Pasuk? Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Chodesh Nichnas V'Chodesh Yotza U'Mamoinen Ovad. When the Pasuk makes reference to a month, it's like we commonly say the month came in, the month left, and all that they had was gone, and all their money was lost. V'Omar Rabo Bar Rav Ado V'Amri Lo, a different name, a possibility is Omar Rabbi Salo Omar Rav Hamnuna. Kol hanosei isha she'eno hoygenes loy. Elio koisei v'kodesh bochu rotzo. The Rashi, though it's not part of the formal text, it's in a parenthesis section within Rashi, he explains that Elio here is not the famous, we'll say, prophet Elijah, who lived at the time of Achav in the middle of the first Beis Hamikdash period, but rather it's the name of an angel that serves in heaven. So the man who marries a woman that's not proper, not fit for him, this angel binds him. Binding ties him up to a pole, which is the procedure for someone that's supposed to receive lashing. V'Kodesh Baruch Hu wrote so, and the Almighty lashes him. Vitana al kulam elio kaisa v'kodesh baruch hosem. Regarding all of these, the kehanim levim israelim, the angel writes and the Almighty signs. Oy lo lepoisil azaro lepogim es mishpachto. Woe unto him who profanes his seed, his children, and defames his family. Ulanose isho sheno hagenes lo. Woe unto he who marries a woman that is not fit, that's posel, v'chola poisel, posel, v'eino medaber b'shvachoy shel oylam, and he who is in fact disqualified, posel is disqualified, in contrast, by the way, to the term mamzer, which is illegitimate. There are those that are simply, they're called posel, they're disqualified. Those kind of people, their nature is to posel, to claim that others are unfit. That's kol ha-posel posel, he who declares others to be unfit. People that always are, what we say in common terms, we're always bad-mouthing others, other people, things, all kinds of entities, it's a sign that they're puzzle. And those people that are puzzle, whose pedigree is unfit, what characterizes them, they never speak positive about anything. And now we have a Maisa. We have a Shas classic. And this, you'll notice, we have a long marking. Is in my estimation one of the longest meisim, the stories that you'll find in the Shas. You'll see by just following our long marking, this goes down halfway into the wide lines of Omid Beis. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, no saying, we also indicate Ad Omid Beis. Maisa Oroich, a long story, Shehischil B'misha Shetzir Bizo Shliach de Rabbi Yehuda, an individual that insulted the messenger sent by the Amora Rav Yehuda. And this individual insulted his agent, his messenger. So Rav Yehuda nida oisai. Rav Yehuda excommunicated this gentleman. Vigiel Rav Nachman Lodun Banosei. And eventually Rav Yehuda was summoned by this offensive party, who was also the victim of Rabbi Yehuda's excommunication, summoned Rav Yehuda to a din Torah, to a say trial in front of Rav Nachman. B'meshech hasipur muva dino shel Shmuel shekol ha'poisel b'muma posel. In the course of the story, if you're wondering why the story is here, so Shmuel's teaching is featured. We should mention that in the Gemara, where we left off at the end of the source had said, "V'chol ha'posel pasul." He who passels is himself pasul. He who tries to defame and disqualify others himself is probably like that. And in the Gemara, the Omar Shmuel b'mumo posel. Shmuel says that the characteristic is to actually cite project one's own deficiency onto others. And that's what Shmuel's teaching is, that he who passels b'mumo, his own blemish, he attempts to tarnish others. Hahu Gavra, we continue now in the Gemara. There was a man, the Minaharda, from the town of Naharda, the Ol Lebei Mitbachai Bepumbadisa, who entered a butcher shop in the town of Pumbadisa. Omar Lahu, Havu Li Bisra, and he demanded, "Give me meat." Omrule, they said to the guy, he said, "Natar, wait, ad deshokil l'shamei d'Rav Yehuda bar Yecheskel v'neisiv loch." We would say, "Wait your turn." But what they said to him was, "You have to wait until the Shamei." The Shamei is the Shamish, the servant, the agent, the shaliach of Rav Yehuda bar Yecheskel gets what Rav Yehuda ordered, and then we'll give you. So wait till he gets what Rav Yehuda had ordered. Omar, so this guy who came into the shop said, "Man Yehuda bar Shviskiel, the kodimli, the shokal min kamoi." Who's this guy Yehuda? And he insults the great Rav Yehuda, calling him Yehuda bar Shviskiel. Play on the name Yecheskel. Shviskiel, Rashi explains, has to do with one who is ravenous, who's deeply involved with food and eating, and we'll say has a lust for food. And he claims, "Well, who is this guy that he should come and take before me?" Ozlu Amrule le Rav Yehuda. So those that were there reported to Rav Yehuda about this guy's behavior, how he insulted the Rav. Shamte, he put him into excommunication. Omru, they also told Rav Yehuda, "Rogil dekori in shi'avdi." This guy calls people slaves. He tarnishes people's reputation by referring to them as slaves. So what did Rav Yehuda do? Achriz olei da'avdahu. Rav Yehuda announced, "This guy is himself a slave." Ozal ahu azmenei ledino lekamei de Rav Nachman. So this guy came and summoned to a court appearance, summoned Rav Yehuda to a court appearance in the presence of Rav Nachman. Aisi pisco de hazmona. And he brought a court summons. Ozal Rav Yehuda. So now Rav Yehuda has a court summons in his hand to appear in front of Rav Nachman. Now, it's important to have some background regarding the stature of these different Rabbonim. Rav Yehuda was a greater Torah scholar than Rav Nachman. So even though Rav Nachman himself was a great individual, Rav Yehuda was even greater. And Rav Yehuda had his doubts. Is he obligated to appear in front of a lesser individual for a court case? So also Rav Yehuda, lekamei de Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda went to the, in all probability, the Godol Hador, the greatest of the time, Rav Huna, to consult with him. Does he, Rav Yehuda, need to appear in front of Rav Nachman? Omar Lei, Rav Yehuda asked, "Ezel or lo Ezel, shall I go or not?" Omar Lei, Rav Huna responded, Mezal lo mi boy aloch le mezal. In terms of letter of the law, you do not have to go. Mishum de gava rabo at, because you are a great man. And I think it's, you can understand from here that you are greater than Rav Nachman in terms of your own Torah scholarship, your own Torah accomplishments. As Rashi himself says, lo mi boyach lemezal lifnei Rav Nachman shato godol mimenu, you are greater than he. Nevertheless, Elo Mishum Yakra Debein Nesia, because of the Yakra means the honor that one owes to the household of the Nasi. The Nasi was the leader of the Jewish people at that time, and Rav Nachman married the daughter, her name was actually Yalta, the daughter of the Nasi. So he was the son-in-law of the Nasi. So out of honor to the office of Nesia, so Kumzil, go. Also, so Rav Yehuda went, Ashkeche de Ka'ovid Maike. He found Rav Nachman, who was, as we said, he himself was a very great man. He was the head of the Torah Academy in Nahardo, and he was a major jurist. So he found this, Rav Yehuda met Rav Nachman, and what did he see him doing? He was making a fence, a mike is a fence around one's roof. People had flat roofs, and if one gets too near the edge, so the Torah commands us to make a mica around the rooftop. Here was the great man with a hammer and nails and some slats and making, or maybe it was stone, masonry work, whatever. Here was this great man doing, an act of common labor. Omar Leh, so Rav Yehuda said in protest, Lo sover lo mor lo od yomer Rav Huna bar Idi Omar Shmuel. Now, you're going to see Shmuel's name appears very often in this sukkah. Under the Mivneh, the structural note on the side, Hadgosha Shmuel, Behemshech HaGemor Royim Sherav Yehuda Shalom Aretz Shmuel Marbel Etzatetoy. You'll find that Rav Yehuda, who himself was a student of Shmuel, he quotes from him very often many, many different sayings of his. So he quotes Shmuel saying that Kevon Shnismanu Parnas Al Tzibur, once a person is appointed to a leadership position, a communal leadership position, Osur Basias Malocha Bifnei Shlosha, he is not allowed to do common labor in front of as little as three people. Rashi explains on the second line under the Gemara, under the Gemara text, Osur Asim Malocha Bifnei Shlosha Shignaihu. Vishiflus Lador, it's insulting and it's demeaning to the generation Shekfufim that are bound, Lozeshein Lomish Yase Malachtoi. They're bound to someone that doesn't have anyone to do his work for him. So that it's out of honor to the community, we don't want the community's leader to be involved with manual, with menial labor. Because otherwise it shows that the tzibur is under the rule of someone that doesn't have anyone around to do his work for him, which is a sad commentary on the community itself. So you shouldn't be doing this, not for haughty purposes, out of haughtiness or anything of the like, but rather out of honor to the community itself. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman says, don't worry. What am I doing? I'm not doing anything that's major. I'm doing purta de gundarisa hu de koavidna. All I'm making is a little gundarisa. Now the word gundarisa is an unusual word for a fence, and you will see throughout this sukkah there's a number of references. You'll see a dash underlining is used to highlight odd words that Rav Nachman uses, and that arouses the the critique of Rav Yehuda regarding Rav Nachman's choice of words. So Omar Leh, and to highlight Rav Yehuda's response to these words, we're going to be using a bow tie shape. So as you look at the Gemara, you can see, and we have on the side this explain misanya. Misanya means to you, is it so disgusting to you, so hateful to you, to use the simple word, the common word. And on our comment on the side, we've highlighted with the bow tie misanya hatkofas revuta al bechiras Rav Nachman b'milim misuyomim bizman shoyaloi la'adif acherim. Revuta Rav Nachman's choice of words at a time that he should have chosen other words. Let's see the critique of Revuta. So Revuta says, "Amarle misanya maike dechsi b'raisa." Is it so scornful or hateful to you to choose the Torah word? Maike, say I'm making a maike. Why did you say gundarisa? Oh, mechitza, domo rabbonon. Use the word mechitza, fence, which is a rabbinic expression. Why did you choose the strange word gundarisa? Amarle, so Rav Nachman, he doesn't answer. He goes on, he says, Yosef ma a karpita, would you like to have a seat, sit down on the karpita? Now, what's a karpita, Amarle? So Rav Yehuda says, why do you choose that strange word to refer to a bench? Do you find it disdainful to use the word safsal, which is a rabbinic expression, or itzdabo, which is a common word used by people? Why did you use the word karpita? Amarle, Rav Nachman says, he offers Rav Yehuda something to eat. He says, Lechomar es runga. Amarle, hachi amar Shmuel. Thusly says Shmuel, Kolomar es runga. Anyone who refers to this fruit, which I'm sure you probably guessed what it is, it's commonly known as an esrog, but anyone who refers to it as esrunga, tilsa baramus rucha, he's a third filled with air. He means inflated, or as we would say, ramus rucha is a reference to haughtiness. Person who uses a word like that, it's a sign that he's a third full of haughtiness. Oy, esrog. Rather, you should have used the word esroki de kayua rabbonon, as the rabbis refer to that particular fruit. Oh, esroga, the amrishu, the word esroga, without the nun in it. This is the common expression used by people. Why, again, did you use a strange word? Omar lay, so Rav Nachman says, lishti mor, anbiga. Have a drink. Now, anbiga, Rashi says, kais shu revias. It's a revius is a liquid measure. It's a cup holding that amount. People would drink this amount, a beverage that is referred to in the tractate Brochos as asparagus. That's the name of the beverage. So they would have a revius of that kind of drink. So Rav Nachman offers him some anbiga. Amar lei, Rav Yehuda says, Misoni asparagus, dekayua rabbonon. Do you find it disdainful to use the rabbinic expression asparagus, o anpik, the amri hinshi, or anpik, which is the common expression for what you're offering me? Omar Le, Rav Nachman says, Tesi Dunag, Tashkinon. Let Dunag, which was Rav Nachman's daughter's name, let her come and give us to drink. Omar Le, Rav Yehuda says, Hochyomer Shmuel, Ein Mishtamshin Beisha. Shmuel says that one is not to accept a service from a woman. And Rashi says, so that she should not be accustomed to intermingle with male folk. Women, ideally, are to be separate, of course, within the, we'll say, within the bounds of reason, so that if you have the option of someone serving you, you should opt to have a male serving men and women serving women. So what are you having your daughter serving us? Shmuel would not agree with that. So Rav Nachman says, well, Kitane, she's a little girl, she's a minor. So Rav Yehuda says back, "Beferush Omar Shmuel, ein mishtamshin bisha klal bein gedol lebein katana." Rav Shmuel says that no distinction is made between being an adult or a minor. Rav Nachman continues and says, "Nishtar le mor shalma liyalta." Would you like to say words of greetings to my wife? Omar le hochi Omar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says that Shmuel says thusly, "Kul beisha erva." And Rashi says at the bottom line, "Kul beisha erva." The sounds. The vocal sounds of a woman is an issue of immorality for other men. And Rashi says, "Shenemar hashmi'eni es kolech." This is a pasuk from the Tanakh, which indicates that the woman's voice is an element or an entity of beauty. And hence, men that are not married to her shouldn't partake of it, shouldn't enjoy it. Vim eshal b'shloma tishiveni. Rav Yehuda says, if I do as you say, I speak to her, I say, hello, how are you doing? She will inevitably answer me. And at that point, I'm in violation of kol b'isha erva. Now this, we know that Gemara markings on Daf Yomi Shurim do not deign to represent applied halacha, halacha lemaisa. That is something that we recommend, that we insist on your researching further, consulting proper halachic authorities and works that are dedicated to the matter of halacha lemaisa. Here you have something that I'm just going to present as a question, as an issue, but you have to research it further. Kol b'isha erva generally is associated with men listening to women singing. I'm not getting into the details of live singing, group singing, choral singing, recordings, etc., and so forth. But generally, the concept of kol b'isha erva is associated with shir, with song, with something of a musical nature. Conversational voice, generally speaking, is not associated with this expression. However, in this particular Gemara, and with Rashi's commentary, I don't think you can escape the understanding that someone is saying here that even conversational voice of a woman falls under the category of kol b'isha erva, something that is interesting. It's maybe even surprising. So I suggest that if this arouses anyone's curiosity, they certainly should research this further. But in the meantime, Rav Yehuda does not accept Rav Nachman's offer or suggestion to say hello, say words of greetings directly to Yalta, Rav Nachman's wife. So Rav Nachman says, okay, you don't want to talk to her directly, Efshar al yadei shaliach. You can send your regards, you can send your words of greeting through an agent. Amar lehochi amar Shmuel. And Rav Yehuda says, again, quoting Shmuel, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ein shoylin b'shlom isha. Rashi says at the top, ein shoylin b'shlom isha. One is not to ask concerning the welfare of a woman. Shema mitoch sheila shalom yirigilim ze im ze al yedei shlucham v'yavo lidei chiba. Maybe because of this This behavior, which certainly in the Western world and contemporary society, as this recording is being made, many would say this is a proper etiquette. What do you mean not to consult or seek the welfare of your friend's wife? But the Torah approach, at least through the eyes of Rav Yehuda, and no one negates him, is that one should exercise extreme caution and restraint in this type of pseudo-etiquette. Why? So Rashi explained, because by sending even messages, we're talking about a circumstance where it's not direct face-to-face conversation, but it's through an intermediary, that nevertheless can arouse feelings of affection and affinity. And I emphasize again here in the strongest of terms that you're dealing with a married woman. She is Rav Nachman's wife. Interestingly, Rav Nachman himself, the husband, is offering all of these suggestions to Rav Yehuda, but Rav Yehuda is holding forth on how far we ought to go, at least, again, in the opinion of Shmuel, his Rav, in exercising restraint, because the possibility of bonds of affinity and affection developing are a reality. And I don't think that one has to go too far in his active imagination and appreciate the dangers that are referred to here by our sages when one simply reflects on many contemporary societal problems that as this recording is being made, many technological innovations have created. Again, I'm referring to all kinds of societal and moral issues that communication between men and women, even if it's not face-to-face, but through all kinds of technological inventions and developments, have caused. So, food for thought, as they say. Think about the depth of this without some people's knee-jerk, instant reaction and criticism and rejection, all based on certain artificial concepts of etiquette and refinement. When you think about them in a deeper sense and how the bonds between men and women can be formed outside the realm of acceptable halacha, one takes these matters with a greater level of seriousness. So we continue in the Gemara, and Rav Nachman is very insistent, though, that that his wife is accorded, the honor that he thinks is due to her, and he says, Al Yedei Baila, you know, I'll say hello from you to my wife. You know, so we're not dealing with your direct confronting her. We're not dealing with some stranger serving as an agent. I'll say hello in your name. I'll offer her your greetings. Rashi says, "Ehyeh ani shaliach ledavar." Omar le, Rav Yehuda says back, "Hochi Omar Shmuel, ein shalom b'shalom isha klal." Nothing doing. Outside men do not are not to send their words of greeting to married women whatsoever. And Rashi again says, "Shemargil liba v'daita etzlo." This arouses her a woman. We're talking again about a married woman who hears another man is asking about her welfare, is sending his greetings, asking about her welfare, or whatever is involved in Shon B'Shalom Isha. That causes her internal emotional wiring to become, aroused, and it's Margi Libov Vedaito Etzlo. Her lave, her heart, which is emotions, and her daita, her thoughts, then become close to that other man. And that's what we're trying to avoid at all costs. Sholcha Le Devisu. Yalta, that's Rav Nachman's wife. Devisu means his wife. she sends a message to her husband. Shari Le Tigre, would you quickly solve this man's case? Tigre literally is argument, but Rav Yehuda appeared for a court case. Would you solve his case, Delo Nishvuch, Kishar Amoretz, until he makes you into some other common ignoramus? Yalta was a woman that was on the ball, and she saw that her husband is getting the short end of this discussion with Rav Yehuda, that he's going to end up looking really bad at the end of all of this. So solve his, she says to him, get rid of him, but she says solve his case quickly so that he doesn't hang around here, because the longer he stays here, the worse you're going to end up looking. Omar Lay. So Rav Nachman gets the message, and he says to Rav Yehuda, "My shiate demar hocha. What brings you here?" Omar Lay, Tasko dehazmenusa shodamar abasroi. Well, you sent me a court summons. Omar Lay. Rav Nachman looks at him in perplexion, and he says, "I sent you a court summons. Hashta shuta demar lo gamirna." The refined speech of you, I haven't learned, as we saw earlier, how Rav Yehuda criticized Rav Nachman's choice of words. Rav Nachman understands that he doesn't even have the ability to keep up with Rav Yehuda in fine choice of speech. Taskadaz Manusa Mishadarna Lamar, I'm going to send you a court summons. Well, Apik Diskodaz Manusa Mibechade. Rav Yehuda whipped out the court summons from his chest pocket. V'achze lay and showed it to him. Omar lay ha gavra v'ha diska. Here's the man and here's the summons. You know, here I am. And, you know, here, you're asking, how can I possibly send you a summons? Well, here it is. Omar lay. So Rav Nachman says, v'yul v'yosamar l'hocha. Well, since you've come here already, l'shtoi mile ki hechi de lo lemru mechanfi rabona adadi. State your case so that people shouldn't say that the rabbis cover for one another. In other words, make it look like a real case so that the public doesn't get the wrong impression. Omar Lei, so Rav Nachman says, "My taima shamte mor lo gavro. Why did you excommunicate that man?" Rav Yehuda answered, "Seriously, for the Rabbonan. He caused pain to an agent, to an emissary of the Rabbonan, meaning my shaliach, my agent. This guy, in the story in the butcher shop, where this fellow was insulting me, insulting the agent." So Rav Nachman says, "V'nagde mor." Rav Nachman says, "Why don't you lash him?" The Rav Mangid Alman de Mitzar Shulcha de Rabbanon. Rav used to rule thusly. He would issue lashings for one who caused pain to rabbinic emissaries. So Rav Yehuda says back, "De odif minei avdilei. I did something more serious than mere lashings, even though lashings are very painful, but I did something worse, so to speak. Something worse meaning more extreme. And that is to excommunicate him." Rashi says, "De'adifa minei chamura mimenu asisile lekanso. I did something more serious in order to fine him." The Gemara continues. Rav Nachman asks, "My time achriz mor alei de'avdahu. Why did you announce that he's a slave?" "Omalei de'rogil de'kori inshi avdi. He is a regular. He's accustomed to calling other people slaves, Vitoni. And we've learned, kol apoisel pasul. He who defames others, he who disqualifies others, is himself unfit. V'eino medaber b'shvach aliyolam. And he never speaks words of praise. The Omar Shmuel b'mumo posel. And Shmuel says that the style in which, or the choice of disqualification that people like that use, are their own blemishes or their own points of disqualification. So if he disqualifies others, if he passels others by calling them slaves, that's probably what he is. And hence I announce that he's a slave." So Rav Nachman asks, "Eimadam or Shmuel lemecha shle?" Shmuel says, "That you're quoting Shmuel that says b'mumo poso, all that Shmuel might have meant is that you have to consider it. Maybe, you know, if the person is calling you names, calling you this, so he might be that. But it's all internal. You might suspect that. Did Shmuel say that you should announce that he is thusly, that he is thus a slave? In the interim, in the meantime, Omar le hahu bar dinei l'Rav Yehuda. The contestant, the litigant, said to Rav Yehuda, "L'didi koras li'avda, you called me a slave. Dasino mi beis chashmonai malka. I'm a descendant from the royal Hasmonean family." Oh my lay. Rav Yehuda said, "You really dug your own pit." Now he says, "Hochi Omar Shmuel, called Omar mi de beis chashmonai kasina." Avdahu, anyone who claims that he's from the Hasmonean household is in fact a slave. Now, how is that? So, just to put things a little bit in time perspective, the Hasmonean family, the Hashmonoim, who one might associate their fame with the story of Hanukkah, they lived approximately... I would say a little more than 200 years before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Here you're dealing with a middle generation of Amoroyim, which in terms of time perspective, you're dealing with a time period that's several hundred years later without trying to be exact, but certainly several hundred years later. In secular history books, you might find Hanukkah recorded as about 165 years before the Common Era, and this Amoraic period is approximately 300 years after the Common Era. So if you calculate the span of time, you're dealing with a maybe 400-500 year gap in time. So Shmuel says, Shmuel was a bit earlier, was first generation of the Amoraim, about 250 of the Common Era, 250, 300 of the Common Era. He says that anyone who says that they're from the Hashmonoim household is a slave. And Rashi says across from here, called Yomar Beis Hashmonoim, no, Evan who should call Zaro Hargam Hurdas. King Herod killed off all of the Hasmonean family. The Eved Hoya, Hurdas himself was a slave. Umolach Tachten, and he usurped the rulership, the monarchy, from the last vestiges of the Hasmoneans. He was a slave of the Beis Hashmonai, the Korah Bonav Al Shem Beis Hashmonai, and he referred to his descendants as from the house of the Hashmonaim. Umistoma Lav Benois Yisrael Nosiv, you can rest assured that Hurdas did not marry proper pedigree Jewish women. Rank and file Jews would be very wary and careful not to marry off their daughters to slaves. So who did he marry? He didn't marry Jewish women. All of his descendants would in turn be slaves. Who would he have married? He would have married heathen bondmaids. All of the children would have been slaves. So anyone who claims they're a descendant from the Hasmonean family, they're essentially saying they're from their descendants of Herod, who called his children Hasmoneans. We turn back to the Gemara. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman says, Lo sova lo mor lo hodom rabbi abo, Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rav. Do you not hold from Rav's teaching? Kol Talmud Chacham Shemira Halachu Ba. Any Talmud Chacham who issues halachic rulings, im kaidem maisa omra. If the halachic ruling was stated before the case upon which that ruling applies, so if the ruling was stated early before the case, shomina, we heed it. We listen, we're bound by it. Vim lav. If, however, a halachic ruling is stated, I'll say in quotation marks, conveniently, as the case is unfolding, ain't shomin lo. And here you're telling us a ruling of Shmuel which I never heard before. This is like the first time I'm hearing it, just at the time that you need it. Amalei. So Rav Yehuda says, what do you mean this is the first time it's being promulgated? Ha iko Rav Matana dekoi kavosi. There's Rav Matana who holds like me. Now, Rav Matana lo chazil in Ardaw tleisar shani. Rav Matana had not been in the Ardaw 13 years. Hahu yuma osa, on that very day, he showed up. Omar lei, dochir mor, mai de Omar Shmuel. And you can imagine the amazing, we'll call divine intervention where just at that time, this key figure, Rav Matana, shows up, who's going to offer a very important testimony on behalf of what Rav Yehuda claims. So Rav Yehuda turns to Rav Matana, who hadn't for 13 years hadn't been in the Ardaw where this story is unfolding. And Rav Yehuda says to Rav Matana, Dochimor mai omar shmuel ki koi chadukara aguda v'chadukara b'mavra. Do you remember what Shmuel was saying? And here he's being very, very precise. When Shmuel had one foot on the shore, Guda is like the shore of a river, the riverbank, and one foot on the bridge or on the boat, to the ferry to cross, Amalei, so Rav Matana says, yeah, I remember what Shmuel said. Hochi Amar Shmuel, called him on the base Hashmonei Malka Kasina. Anyone who says that I come from the Hasmonean kingdom, Avdahu, he is a slave. From the Hasmonean family, at the very end, there was left only one young girl. She went up to a roof and screamed out, Yomra. And she said, anyone who says that they're from the Hasmoneans is a slave. She jumped off the roof and died. So Rav Yehuda is proving that he is not the first time that what he said at in the middle of his court case is not the first time that this halacha is being heard. Here you have an independent authority that confirms that Shmuel's teaching had been promulgated, had been publicized quite a while before. Therefore, what this guy is saying, that he's from the Hasmoneans himself, he's putting his foot in his mouth, as we said before, he dug his own pit, declaring that in fact, in his own words, he is a slave. Achruz ole de avdahu. So they announced that in fact this guy is a slave. Hahu yuma ikrun kamok subasa benahardo. On that day, a number of ksuba documents. These are ksubas are the financial guarantee that a woman has upon marriage. Now, on that day when it was announced that this fellow is a slave, now this fellow is a member of a family, so that not only he is a slave, but his family members are slaves also. So the women folk from this guy's family are likewise non lacking Jewish pedigree, and as such they should not have entered matrimony with rank and file Jewish men. Hence their marriages are now disclosed, revealed as being illegitimate. So the ksubas, the marriage, the financial guarantees that these women had due to their matrimony are false. So they, on that day, there were torn up many ksuba documents. The women folk from this guy's family who really shouldn't have married. Ki ka nafik, as Rav Yehuda was leaving, nafki abasre le mirgamei. There were crowds that pursued him to stone him, for he revealed their psul, their disqualification. Omar Lahu, Rav Yudah says, you want to give me a hard time? I'll tell you fellas something. Isha siku, shasiku. If you remain quiet, then remain quiet. Then fine. Below, and if you insist on it, if you insist on persecuting me, maglino alaihu ho di Omar Shmuel. I'm going to reveal to you what Shmuel said. And what did Shmuel say? Tarti zaraiso ikob and ardo. There are two families in this town. Chada mikri de beyoina, v'chada mikri de beyurvasi. One is called the beyona. Yona is a kosher variety bird. So it's as if he's saying one is called the dove family, and the other is called the raven family. The urav, orav, is an unkosher variety bird. The simonech, and in order to remember the identity of these families, and whether they're kosher or they're kosher families or not, remember the following: Tomei, Tomei, Tohar, Tohar. So those families that go by the name Bei Yona, they're kosher. There are those families that go by the name of Urvasi, they're unkosher, they're unfit. So Rav Yehuda is telling the throng persecuting him, you ought to be quiet, because otherwise I'm going to make this information public. Shadua lahu rigma miodayu. The crowds threw the stones that they had prepared to throw at Rav Yehuda. The kom atma benar malka. The stones that they cast away, they threw into the river, and it ended up damming up the river Malka. That was the name of the river. The point is, the illustration here is to show the vast amount of stones and probably people that assembled there to persecute Rav Yehuda. There were so many stones and probably people that it was enough to dam up the river. After they discarded their stones into the river. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivneh, structural note, where a double underline is featured. Hachrozos Rabbonim b'mekayma binyan psula yuchsim. Announcements made by different rabbis. We have Rav Yehuda, and a couple lines later, Rava, in their respective communities, regarding families of impure pedigree. Machris Rav Yehuda b'Pumbedisa. Pumbedisa was Rav Yehuda's locale. These are names. You have Oda v'Yoina's son, Avdi. Yehuda bar Popa Mamzera. Oda and Yoina's son are slaves. And I think from the context of the Gemara, you can assume that these are all revelations. They weren't known to be thus on a public level. He announced that they are. And Yehuda bar Popa, Mamzera. Beti bar Tuvia, Baramus Rucha lo Shokil Gita de Jerusa. This woman, Beti bar Tuvia, or I should say, it's not a woman, a man, Beti or Boti bar, the son of Tuvia, out of haughtiness, Ramus Rucha. We had this expression earlier. Because of his high-spiritedness, his haughtiness, he refused to accept a document of freedom. In other words, this guy is basically a slave. But he wasn't perceived as a slave in the eyes of the public. So if he's perceived as a free man, he wouldn't accept a freedom document. That's what you give to a slave. So what Rav Yehuda is saying is that this guy, Buddy Bartuvia, essentially is a slave. He didn't even accept a freedom document that would have made him into a full-fledged Jew. Machriz Rava b'Mechuza. Rava announced in Mechuza, and here we have a list of names. Baloi, Danoi, Taloi, Maloi, Zagoi, Kulam Lipsul. They're all disqualified. They're all of impure pedigree, impure Jewish pedigree. Omar Rav Yehuda, Govai, Givonai. Dur Nunisa Daroi Nasinoi. Rashi mentions Govai Givoni. Klomal Shem Shoy Givonim Nikru Bavel Govai. Korov Li Givonim Bishmam. The people in Bavel that were called Govai, those people that lived in Babel called Govai, are really from the Givonim. The Givonim were a people that misrepresented themselves in the time of Joshua, and King David declared them forbidden to marry into the Jewish people. And likewise, the Dornu Nisa, that's a community, Daroi Nesinoi, that's a community of Nesinim. Nesinim, likewise, like the Givonim, were those people that were declared unfit to marry into the Jewish people. Omar Rav Yosef, Hai Bei Kubi, the Pupadisa. Bei Kubi is a community, a town near Pupadisa, Kulam de Avdi. It's a community of slaves. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. And here you see a new marking, a triangle. And on the side, you see we've noted Shnei Gishois L'Kayin Shiesh Bo Azuz Ponim. Two approaches regarding Kayhanim that have, we'll say, poor character, that they're coarse and bold, and have nerve. Azuz Ponim, they're bold. As we said, churlish. So, Omar Vira, Omar Shmuel, Arba Meis Avodim, V'Amrila Arbos Alofim Avodim. There were 400, some say 4,000 slaves. Hoyulo Le Pashur Ben Imer. This is a man in the time of the prophet Yirmiyahu. V'Kulam Nitme'u B'Kahuna. And these slaves got mixed into the priesthood. The Rashi explains that a slave of a Kohen is entitled to eat Truma, the tithe separated from produce given to the Kohanim and forbidden for non-Kohanim to eat. But by virtue of the fact that a Kohen owns the slave, they're called Kinyan Kaspo, and the slave of a Kohen is entitled to eat Truma. Over the course of time, people saw these people eating Truma, and they got the feeling, they got the idea that they're actually Kohanim, not slaves. So they ended up mixing into Kohen families. And the Kohen Shiesh Bo Azuz Ponim, any Kohen that you see that has this nature about him of Azuz Ponim, Heinu Ela Mehem, he in fact is a descendant of these slaves. A full pedigree. Pure Kohen wouldn't have that characteristic. So how do you explain their behavior? We just did. They're descendants of these slaves. Omar Abai, Kulhu Yasvon Beshura de Benahardo. And all of them live in this location that the Gemara calls Shura de Nahardo. Upliga de Rabbi Elazar. This approach taken by Shmuel is at odds or differs than Rabbi Elazar's approach. If you see a Kohen behaving in a churlish fashion, do not question his purity. The Pasuk describes the nation to be like the argumentative Kohanim. In other words, Rabbi Elazar, citing this Pasuk, portrays Kohanim as being a subdivision of the Jewish people, the priesthood, the priests, the Kohanim, as being argumentative and involved with this and having this characteristic of Azus Metzach, of boldness. Omar Rabbi Ovin Bar Rav Ado, Omar Rav. And here again we have the house marking that we had from the previous Omid. Anyone who marries a woman that's disqualified, that's not fit for him, when the Almighty has his divine presence dwell amongst the people, the divine presence will testify regarding the others as being my people, but not him, not this guy who married an unfit woman. Shenemar shifte ko edus liYisrael. Rashi says under the Gemara text, Edus Yisrael, oison shame Yisrael, who made aleim shame Yisrael? Those that are of pure Jewish pedigree, the divine presence announces, testifies, they are mine. So we quoted the pasuk, shifte ko. Edus Yisrael, Amosai Have Shifte Edus Yisrael. When are they? When is their edus testimony that they are of Israel? Bizman shashvotim shiftei ka, when the tribes are God's tribes, they're of pure pedigree. Amar of Chama bar Chanina. Before we continue, though, let us glance at the side. We have a nosei topic heading. Shechina Shoira Rak al Mishpachos HaMiuchasos. The Divine Presence dwells only on families of pure pedigree. Number two, Hevdel Ben Gerim LiYisrael. A difference between converts and original Jewish pedigree. Number three, Koshim Gerim LiYisrael Kesapachas. Converts present a difficulty to the Jewish people, like Sapachas. And we'll see more about that when we get into the Gemara. The Gemara itself says, Omer Avchama Bar Chanina, Kishakosh Borchu Mashrish Chinosa, when the Kodesh Borchu has his divine presence dwelling, Ein Mashrel Amishchosis Michosish Bisrael, his divine presence rests upon only those pure pedigree Jewish families. Shnemar, the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Chof He says, Bo'es hahinu Mashem Eyeh Lelukim L'chol Mishpachos Yisrael. L'chol Yisrael lo nemar, doesn't say to all of the Jewish people, Elo L'chol Mishpachos. It says to all the families of the Jewish people. And that means families that are complete, total, pure Jewish background. The continuation of that pasuk says, "Vehema yu li la'am." Amar Rabba bar Avuna zu mali yaseir yesh bein Yisrael legerim. Here we have an additional quality that Jewish people of pure pedigree have over converts. The ilu bi Yisrael k'siv v'hayisi lohem le'lokim vehema yu li la'am. Notice the order, and the dot underlining helps to highlight this. When it comes to the Jewish people, it says, I will be unto them as a God, and they will be unto me as my people. V'ilu begerim siv, when it comes to converts, it says, Mihu ze orav es libo, logesh es elaynu mashem, whose heart has found it desirous to come unto me, a reference to conversion. And they will be unto me as a people, and I will be unto them as a God. So Rashi, the second line from the bottom, says, even though they are not unto me as a people, mitov shani makarvam heim yu li la'om. And since I draw them near, they will then be unto me as a people. So you have a situation described in the Pasuk where even though the Jewish people are behaving in a wayward fashion, I nevertheless am their God. I will draw them near, and they will then be unto me as a nation. But when it comes to converts, the heaven doesn't draw them near, unless the Gentile on his own decides to accept Judaism. He has to take the initiative. The Almighty does not intervene. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rebbe Chelbo, Koshim Geir Yisrael Kesapachas. This is a very delicate topic. There are many different explanations on it. Rashi has one explanation. I highly recommend looking into the Tosfos commentary for additional aspects of this. And the different pirushim, the different explanations you see, are not necessarily exclusive of one another, but they feature different aspects of how the Jewish people identify with converts. So Rabbi Chelbo says they're difficult to the Jewish people like sapachas. Sapachas is associated with tzoras. It's a skin discoloration. It's also painful. And the pasuk says shenemar v'nilva hager aleim v'nispechu al beis yankov. Here the pasuk describes converts using the word v'nispechu, and they join up with them. But this unusual word v'nispechu is explained by the Gemara k'siv hocha v'nispechu k'siv hosem. In the context of tzoras, it says loseis v'lasapachas, and you notice how we dashed underline the key words. Rashi at the very bottom says, Koshim Gerim She'enom Ziyu B'mitzvahs. We're talking about those kind of converts that are not careful with mitzvah performance. This is in clear contrast to converts that are very diligent in mitzvah performance, but those that are not create a difficulty for the Jewish people. The Haragilim Etzlam, regular Jews that keep company with them, they'll learn from the behavior of these converts that appear as Jewish, but their mitzvah diligence leaves a lot to be desired, and others learn from them. So that results in a decline in Jewish diligence in mitzvah performance. Amongst the other commentaries is something in great contrast to this, that many converts are actually far more diligent in their mitzvah performance, making the regular traditional Jews of original Jewish pedigree look bad. So that's another aspect of Koshin Gerim Yisrael Kesapachas, because of their high quality and adherence and diligence in mitzvah performance, they make the regular Jews look bad. Different aspects of how to interpret, how to view Gerim, and I said look into commentaries, because this could actually be a very sensitive topic to many who are learning this. The Gemara continues, Omar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, Keshekadosh Baruch Hu Metaher Shvotim Shifto Shalevi Metaher Tchila. When the Almighty comes to purify and declare pureness of pedigree and separate out those that are unfit, the tribe of Levi is purified first. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'yoshav mitzorif mitayer kesef v'tiar es bnei Levi v'zikak oisom kazov v'chak kosef." Fahoyu Lashem Magishe Mincha Bitstoka. Without translating the pasuk literally, you have the like you purify the silver and separate the dross from the silver, so too the Bnei Levi, the tribe of Levi, will be purified, and they will then serve in offering meal offerings in the Beis Hamikdash. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.